He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, would you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tar-Hill.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
You are on a Thursday Drive. And let's count it down. We are 6 hours away from tip-off of the NBA Finals. As for who I think's going to win, I'm not going to overthink it. I've watched both these teams play a dozen times apiece, probably a lot more than that since October, and I'm going to trust my eyes here. The Celtics are the better team this season, so I'm picking them. And I think they're going to win in six games. But don't just take it from me. Listen to the experts. Listen to the math. The basketball community seems pretty aligned on this. The people that I talk to, I was reading an NBA anonymous story in The Athletic, which had scouts, head coaches, executives giving their predictions anonymously on what they thought would happen. And here's a quote from that Athletic story from an active NBA head coach. Boston's defense is good enough to be able to limit the easy buckets that Golden State generates. That's what I'm considering. Boston can play big with Robert Williams, maybe Horford. They can play small with Grant Williams. They can switch a lot. They're physical. He has Boston in six games. So that's the basketball community. They all seem to be aligned on Boston. The analytics nerds are even more overwhelming. They think Boston is going to win, and there's really not much dispute about it. Take ESPN's BPI. This is math. You crunch all the numbers going back to October and into postseason, and this is what came out. ESPN's BPI gives Boston an 86% chance of winning the finals. 86%. That's just one company, though, Josh. You're just going to rely on BPI? Okay, how about 538? 80% chance that the Boston Celtics win the finals. I don't always trust the experts. I don't always trust the math. But when both those things are aligned together telling you the same thing, and it's also in line with what my eyes say, you bet I'm going to buy into that. It's also important to stay current, too. All the greats stay current. I've always told myself, as long as I do this, I'm not going to be the guy that says, back when I was in high school and college, that's when sports were at their best. Back in my day, that's when things were really good. And just draw on the past. Stay current. That's why I listen to new music. The greats stay current. It's not just what was great back in the day, it's what's great now. At the Chris Rock show last night, which I enjoyed. Chris Rock's 57 years old. But when he's talking about music, when he's making jokes and using examples, he's not drawing back on the Gap Band or going back to the 90s. Hey, yo, when I was together with the Fat Boys. No. He's making jokes about Doja Cat and Lil Nas X from a 57-year-old man. Why? Because Chris Rock stays current. That's a big part of the reason Chris Rock is great. Stay current. When I hear, it's why Golden State is a favorite in Las Vegas. Las Vegas has Golden State as a favorite while all the nerds say they're going to win. And the basketball community says Boston's going to win because they're reacting to the public. I was walking through Charlotte Airport and I ran into a listener on the way back to Boston. Way back from Boston, my bachelor party last weekend. Guy comes up to me and says, Josh, whew, Golden State, if they play Boston, Golden State's going to win in a sweep. What?
Easy.
Yeah, what? Yeah, Will Dalton, executive producer of the show, by the way.
Hey.
The W&D. I mean, he says that, and then I talk to him. I ask how much basketball he watches. Nah, you know, I usually pay attention when the playoffs get here. Eh, when the playoffs come around, that's when I pay attention. And you got to remember this. Most people are not diehards. A lot of people consume sports and politics the same way. And here's what I mean by that. You have the diehards, But then you got to realize most people probably just think, okay, when's the next election? Then I'll turn on Fox or MSNBC or CNN. Oh, when's the next election? I'm not watching it day to day. I'm not watching Bill Maher every weekend. Then you got, in sports, the folks who are, I'm not watching NBA basketball in November or in January. Tell me when the playoffs get here. Then I'll start paying attention. And if that's your mindset, the casual NBA fan, you're probably thinking, that's still Steph Curry. I watched them win the finals just a handful of years ago. And that's still Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. These Boston guys, I haven't watched a lot of them. Haven't seen them in the finals before. This series reminds me a lot of the 2014 finals. Spurs Heat. That's not the one where Ray Allen hit the shot. It's the year after that. And the reason why this series reminds me of that, Miami was a favorite in the series going in, even though San Antonio had the best record in the regular season. They had a lot of younger guys on the team. They had more guys in their prime. Miami was falling apart. So while it was some of the same faces, LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, it wasn't the same LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. They got beaten by Kawhi Leonard, who became a mainstay, and Danny Green and some of these other guys that were just coming into their prime. That's what this series reminds me a lot of. The blown leads with Boston, it concerns me. But the mismatches that Golden State's dealing with concerns me a lot more. Boston has more depth. They have a better bench. I look at the size problem that we've been talking about a bit this week. Golden State, they've gotten favorable matchups up to this point in the finals. Boston hasn't. They ran through the defending champ. Sure, they didn't have Chris Middleton, but that was a battle. Conference finals, Miami, they were in the finals just a couple years ago. Who has Golden State gone through? Memphis, and Ja Morant was out for half the series, and you didn't play Phoenix, but instead you go up against the Mavericks, who have one all-star and one all-star only? Okay. Give me the Celtics. Golden State has the name power, but stay current. Listen to the math. Listen to the experts who are telling you, and telling you pretty clearly, it's Boston. They are the better team. Don't overthink this. I don't know if they win tonight on the road in San Francisco, but over the long span of a series, I'm trusting the math. I'm trusting the better team is going to win out. I think it's Boston, and I got them in six. On Twitter at WSJS Sports if you want in on today's show. We've got two more pairs of Doobie Brother tickets that we're going to be giving away, but this is for not Charlotte next week, but Raleigh next Saturday. So if you want to see the Doobie Brothers next Saturday, 9 days from now in Raleigh, this is what you're listening for to win. Save the number, 336-777-1600, the same one that you call if you want to talk to the WD or potentially get in on today's show. So, well, Sarah Bradford and I, we had a terrific night in Greensboro at the Chris Rock Show. Oh, he was so good. Wish you were there.
I do too.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have any extra
tickets.
We didn't have any extra tickets.
Because B-Dot was asking, he's like, you going out there? I'm like, I don't think we have any more tickets.
Yeah, B-Dot was there. He had a great time hanging out with the folks from Beamer Tire, Doug Beamer and company. Had a really nice night in Greensboro. But do you know who didn't have a good night? Duke basketball. They lost Trevor Keels, which it was 50-50 whether or not he was going to come back all the way through. Everything I was told, 50-50. We don't know if he's staying in the draft or he's going to come back to Duke. And it came down to the 11th hour, literally. See, this isn't like the teenager using the word literally improperly. No, no, no. This is literally the 11th hour. He had to 11:59 to make a decision. We get the Jeff Goodman report at around 11-something. It was 50-50. And he decided he was going to stay in the draft. Duke started preparing for life without him during the week at the combine. They put together a plan B. That plan B was Northern Iowa's A.J. Green, who shoots over 40% from three. They felt really awesome about him. Hey, if Keels doesn't come back, we got this guy we could plug in and be a starting shooting guard for us. But it became a really bad night for Duke when, surprisingly to a lot of people, A.J. Green kept his name in the draft, too. Yikes. So there goes plan A, which is Keels. There goes plan B, which is Green. Now Duke's in search of a starting shooting guard. Joey Baker's transferred out. They have a freshman named Jaden Shutt coming in, and that's not one of those five stars that they're bringing in. They got a lot of those. Jaden Shutt's not one of them. Jalen Blake's last year probably, you know, going to be a guy who maybe plays a role in a few years a la Jordan Goldwire, one of those guys who develops, but he's not ready to step into a starting role yet for a team that might be top five in the country. So they need to find somebody. Fortunately, you're Duke, and Duke is Duke, as we all know. But you got to find somebody in the transfer market who's going to be a fit. According to Steve Wiseman of the News and Observer, they have expressed interest in Texas's Courtney Ramey. And I hear people saying good things about Ramey, but I've watched a lot of Texas basketball too. You know, fun team to watch with Chris Beard this past year. They overachieved, I felt, in his first season. But never really did Ramey jump out too much to me. Averaged around 9, 10 points a game the year before that, 12 points. He's been around a little while. Not a proven scorer. Okay three-point shooter. 36, 37% from three. Not as good as the alternative of A.J. Green or getting Trevor Keels back. So that 1-2 punch of losing out on Keels and losing out on A.J. Green, that's a really tough blow for Duke.
I have a pain in my ear. And what is causing it?
The Drive with Josh Graham on WSJS Sports.
Connor O'Neill, hanging out in studio with us, covers Wake, covers the Blue Devils as well. Had a chance to catch up with both Sean Shire and Coach K yesterday at the K Academy. We'll learn more about that momentarily. We need to get to the important stuff, though. Will Dalton watched a few good men for the first time last night. What do you got next week again?
Seven.
Ah.
Yeah.
Your heart's going to be full after watching that.
I see.
It's going to make you feel real good inside. But we're not talking about seven yet.
We're not.
We're talking about a few good men. Do you want the truth? Can you handle the truth?
I don't think you can handle the truth.
All right, let's go to the movies.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
Will?
Yeah.
Here's what I need from you.
Yep.
Need you to tell me what you liked, what you didn't like, your favorite quote, and give me a Rotten Tomatoes score for it, 0 to 100. But before you give me that, Connor O'Neill, how high up on the cruise meter is A Few Good Men?
The cruise? What do you mean by that? I need a definition on the cruise meter.
I guess.
Like best work to worst
His
work?
Best movie to worst movie, how high up is A Few Good Men?
I would put it, so I haven't seen the Top Gun sequel, so I'm a little incomplete here. I haven't seen many of the Mission Impossible sequels either. A Few Good Men is right there under Top Gun for me. In the Tom Cruise.
Did you watch the new Top Gun?
No.
I hear great things about it. I wasn't a big fan of the original, so that's...
Really?
Yeah, just I'm not a big action movie guy, and I thought it was cheesy. It depends on when you watch it. See, I've watched it in the last 10 years, so the music and all that didn't have a great effect on me. But I hear great things about the new one. So I'm definitely going to give that a look. A Few Good Men's my favorite Tom Cruise movie. I think it's his best one. What did you like most about Top Gun? Not Top Gun. A Few Good Men, Will Dalton.
I really enjoyed Jack Nicholson in this.
Yeah.
I could go very cliche and say, which Tom Cruise was obviously great too, but I really liked Jack Nicholson in this, and he had some very good dialogues. And I always appreciate good dialogues. Like that's part of the reason why I love Game of Thrones so much is because just the dialogues. It's just They're nice to listen to. I don't know how to explain it better than that.
Yes.
So
he was Colonel Nathan Jessup.
That's right.
In this movie. If you don't think you can get him, back down. If you don't think you can get him, back down. Okay, so you like Jack Nicholson.
Did.
Of course, you have that sequence at the end that might be the most iconic sequence
right.
in any movie.
We've got to put in the nod to Aaron Sorkin here for the dialogue. Like,
yes.
That's the key here.
First movie he's ever written.
Yeah.
Here's the key of Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin's very good at adding a bunch of jargon, lingo, and making it sound cool and like something he knows things about, and writing it in such a way that you feel like you know what it's about, yeah. too, even though I have no idea any of this law lingo that they're describing. Great stuff. So I actually thought Cruz out-acted Nicholson in that final scene.
I did, too. That part,
not hard to do. Or it's very hard to do, yeah, I should
that,
say.
That part where he says, you're under arrest, you son of a bleep.
Yeah.
I lost it.
You lost it?
I thought it was funny, just the way you said it.
Okay. Okay.
I also like courtroom dramas. That's another little nugget in there.
Well, this might be as good as you find in that category. What didn't you like? Because there's only one answer to this.
I hope I got it right. I didn't care for Demi Moore's character.
That's the correct answer.
Is that correct?
Demi Moore, great actress, not good in this movie at all.
No.
I rewatched it a couple days ago because I knew he was watching it and I hadn't seen it in a while.
Oh, yeah?
Demi Moore.
Didn't care for.
Yeah.
I mean,
also, not a good lawyer at all.
No.
I'm trying to remember what the line is. It's
strenuously objecting?
No. We've already said that one. It's, I'm sorry I lost your set of steak knives.
That's right. Right. And it's like they try to explore.
That.
No. Butchered it with like a steak knife. They went a little bit out there to make it seem like there was an interest and like she asked him out on a date, but then they never revisited at all.
And she was kind of cold to him.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like that. I don't like that.
She pushed him along. She motivated him, but she has a lot better movies in her arsenal than I think her performance in A Few Good Men. That's the best way. That's the kindest way I can put it for Demi Moore. I don't know. Do you have a favorite Demi Moore movie? G.I. Jane, Ghost? I've
never seen G.I. Jane or Ghost. Honestly, the first Demi Moore movie that comes to mind is that awful Charlie's Angels sequel.
Yeah! Awful. What are you talking about? That movie gets it done. Watch it about a couple times a year. Okay, so you didn't like Demi Moore's character. I'm
glad
impressed.
I got that one right.
You nailed it.
I feel good about that.
What's the best quote?
There's a lot to choose from.
What's the second best quote, I guess, is probably the better question.
That's right. I specifically like that scene where Jack Nicholson's character says, there's nothing on this earth sexier, believe me, gentlemen, than a woman you have to salute in the morning. Promote them all, I say.
I don't think we could talk about more of the quotes of Jack Nicholson in that scene. If you want to talk about things that don't age well, that one probably doesn't age the greatest.
I'm sorry, I stepped out for a second. What were you guys talking about?
I will tell you one thing I appreciated. Tom Cruise, what was he slugging for most of the movie?
Say what?
What was Tom Cruise drinking for most of the movie? One item that he drank three times in the movie. Yoo-hoos. He was drinking
Yoo-hoos.
Yoo-hoos. Love it. That's great product placement, or it might just be Cruise because he's a strange guy saying, I'll do this movie, but I'm only going to drink Yoo-hoos.
Love it.
And also, how do we think Cruz is as a baseball player?
Not good.
All those scenes where he's
not
hitting
good.
Grounders?
Not good.
Small strike zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was another notable thing. Not a good ball player. He was hacking.
Yeah. Tom Cruz taking some swings.
Not good.
He's so strange when he tries to do human-type activity like run
yeah,
or
Josh
kiss.
Yeah, Josh seems to think he's an alien.
He is. Sometime. I think he is an alien. Runs funny, kisses funny, drinks from a bottle funny. Drinks funny things from said bottle. Hits grounders funny. Hey,
jumps on Oprah's
Valkyrie
couch
now.
Funny.
Yes! Laughs funny. He does nothing like a normal human being, Tom Cruise. Okay, here's the moment of truth, though. 0 to 100, A Few Good Men. I don't think we've had a score from Will at this point lower than 90.
No. Well, because they're all like, I feel like you give me like very, very good
movies. I gave you The Other Guys last week.
And I thought it was a great
comedy.
It's
a fantastic movie.
See?
Yeah, but it's not an Oscar winner.
But in the comedy world, like.
Yeah. Okay.
Comedies never
don't
do
win
well
comedy.
Yeah.
So you need to give me a movie that's like questionable. People are on the fence about it.
Maybe Seven is that. See, rom-coms don't do well either.
See us next week.
Okay.
You know what? Let me go 92 on this.
A 92?
Go a 92. Demi knocked off about 8% on this.
Wow. That might be the meanest thing that you've ever said on this show.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I respect it. 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
You want to hear something funny? I almost was going to give it an 89, but I...
You gave it a 92, though.
Yeah, it was the Yoo-Hoos. That's what did it.
I hope you're keeping tabs of what you're scoring all these so we can go back. The way that, I don't know, when you were a kid, if your mom or dad, like, marked your height on a wall somewhere.
They didn't, but I saw people who did.
My mom did. Connor, did they do that? You get that treatment where you... 1 year
yeah,
old.
Yeah, I think we had a... A post, like, you know, the crown mold, not crown molding, but like the post between the kitchen and the hallway had some marks on it for my height.
That's what I want this to be like. I want Will to see his progression of the movies that he's watched.
I'm trying to come up with, I'm trying to resource here on my phone and look up a On the Fence movie.
Yeah, see, that's what I think I need.
I'm down.
Like, away from the classics.
I'm down for Will, or for Connor, throwing a movie at Will that he could see. I was thinking maybe, in the spirit of the Elvis movie coming out in a couple of weeks, is there a music biopic movie? Dewey Cox, Walk the Line.
Yeah, I mean, Walk the Line is great, though.
Is it?
I thought so.
Okay.
I mean, hell, I could just go watch Elvis and do that.
Yeah.
No, well, the point of this
Reese
movies that you haven't
won an
seen.
Oscar for Walk the Line.
That's true. She was great as June Carter Cash. Let's type in music biopics just to see what comes up. See if anything noteworthy. I already said that. The movies. Well, is there a music biopic that's shameful that he hasn't seen before? The point also has to be, wait a minute, you haven't seen that movie?
Okay.
Huh. We could think on this for a second.
I got a lot of movies here on my IMDb. All right,
what do you got? Just throw some movies out.
I'm coming across all the.
I'm searching things too.
It's not On the Fence, but Pretty Woman.
Wow, Pretty Woman.
It's not on the fence. It's not on anybody's fence of whether it's a good or bad movie. But that
have you ever seen School of Rock?
I think so. Who's in that?
Jack Black.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Pitch Perfect.
I think I might. What's that about?
It's like
acapella.
Like an acapella movie, Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson.
I don't remember it enough if I did see
Almost it. Famous. Have you seen it?
No.
West Side Story.
I don't think so.
I'm just thinking of movies that are music related.
If anybody is on the fence about Almost Famous, come to the studio and I will fight you.
That's right. That movie's too good. We can't do that movie. That movie's too good. It's going to be another 92 if we did that movie.
Yep.
While I try to dig up some for your perusing, tell us how Coach K is doing. You visited with him. Did anyone ask about his new puppy?
That was the only substantial thing that I was there to get information on. I mean... Coach K looks like somebody who has not been a Division I basketball coach for 2 months. He looks refreshed. We were talking in between, you know, we had 5 or 10 minutes between talking to Coach K and talking to John Shire, and the consensus among media there was, wow, he looks refreshed. He no longer looks like he's been sleep deprived for the last 6 months, like we saw him in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Wright Thompson laid that out beautifully in his long form feature about Coach K, in that, you know, the hours get long even for a person in their mid 70s. It's it's a grind of a season. And so removed from that, now it was interesting, like, Josh, I don't know if you remember last year, at the beginning of the year, we talked to Coach K, and then we talked to his staff.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to use the word last.
Yeah.
He wanted nobody saying that four-letter L word, and it wasn't loss, it was that last.
Or love.
Right. So now he seems to bristle at the word retirement. Like, he's not retired. He just stopped coaching. So, because he's still doing stuff with the school, he's obviously involved with the K Academy. John Shire made a joke about, you know, it's not the S Academy, it's the K Academy. It's the 19th year of it. And so, and like, Coach K has a speaking engagement in Vegas on Monday. He's doing stuff. He's just not coaching basketball. So that was really interesting to hear his separation of, I'm not retired, I'm just not coaching basketball anymore.
How did Shire sidestep the question about Trevor Keels?
He basically didn't. I mean, that was my question, was when was the last time you talked to Trevor? And this was, you know, going down to the minute, this was at about 3:38 yesterday. And he said he had talked to him earlier that day. His message about Trevor was the same that it was about a month before when we talked to the coaching staff, that they wanted Trevor to feel supported. They wanted him to feel like he was making the most informed decision possible. There was, you know, at least that John Shire is going to tell us, there was no, you know, getting 100 text messages telling him how much of a mistake he'd be making if he left early, and what he would be leaving on the table if he left to go to the NBA and left Duke. Like, there's none of that goes on anymore. If there is, it's a lot less than it would have been 10 to 15 years ago.
I got 7/8 movies here that I'm pretty confident Will hasn't seen, that you let me know if this checks the box of what we're looking for here. La La Land.
See, I haven't seen it.
Seen it.
Dirty Dancing.
Another one I haven't seen.
Okay.
Haven't seen it.
I feel like a lot of people like Dirty Dancing, though, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's a movie that you have to see, I don't think people do that for bad movies, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah,
if we're talking about ones that should be ranked in the 90 percentile, that's different. And also, I see some mixed opinions the further you go back with movies. We could do Footloose.
Heard good things.
Blues Brothers.
Now that's interesting.
Drumline.
Ooh, have you seen Drumline?
I actually think I have.
Really? Okay. Who's in it?
Well, I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure I remember watching this movie. Yeah, I have seen that.
Okay. Wayne's World.
Not a big Mike Myers fan.
John Cusack, High Fidelity.
Nope.
Whiplash.
Ooh. I think that one has probably aged terribly for even as new of a movie as it is.
You haven't seen Whiplash, have you? Okay. So, or we could just do Top Gun, call it a day.
I mean,
how we feel about Whiplash? So you liked the idea of Dirty Dancing, you liked the idea of Blues Brothers, and Whiplash, basing it off your reaction. Which movie is Will going to watch in a few weeks?
All I know, I have not seen Whiplash. It's one of those that I've seen enough clips, I've seen enough references, I've seen enough, you know,
sure,
honest trailer breakdowns of it, that I get what it's about. I'd lean Blues Brothers,
okay,
just because that's kind of a cultural phenomenon.
He was also an intern on the David Glenn Show once upon a time. So you've got to see the Blues Brothers. That's it. Blues Brothers is the movie. You're going to watch that 2 weeks from now.
It is insane.
Everybody is insane.
What's going on in there?
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham on WSJS Sports.
How cool is this? Rick Riley, National Sports Media Association Hall of Famer. And also, I'd say, maybe the best MC of the event. I don't know. Ryan McGee or Wes Durham might get mad at me suggesting that. Rick Riley, how would you feel if I say that you are NSMA MC extraordinaire in Salisbury / Winston-Salem?
I feel like I wish you'd say it louder.
God, I remember all those years coming to Salisbury and then Winston-Salem. Then I quit, and no one has asked me about me since. They just forgot me completely.
Well, I don't think they've forgotten about your books, though. There are a lot of really good ones, and this new one, So Help Me Golf. We were talking, and I love the concept of this book. A few weeks ago, we were talking with Bob Ryan, another guy associated with the NSMA and one of the best writers out there. He has a new book out that is a really creative deal about scorebooks and how personal they can be and some of the things that have come out of all the games he scored dating back to the
70s. I love it.
It's a great – and the book fair they have at the NSMA is great next month, or actually later this month, that we're excited about. Tell me about So Help Me Golf, the concept of it. 30-second version. We're sitting here at a bar. I want to get this book. What is it about?
Well, it's a story, a book I've been collecting string on for 40 years, ever since I fell in love with golf at 11 years old. And so it's funny, true, emotional, real stories, all about, you remember I used to do that column at SI?
Yeah.
All about that length. And there's a lot of human interest ones. And I'll just give you one. This is the kind of stories in there. At Lahinchin, Ireland one day, there's a on the fifth hole, which is a blind par three. I don't know if you've ever played a blind. I don't think there are any in America, but occasionally in Ireland you'll find one. You got to hit it over a hill. You don't even know if there's a green over there. And in one day, four guys, all Americans, made holes in one in the space of an hour and a half. It was the craziest confluence of luck of all time. So in the bar that night in Lahinch, everybody's going crazy and everybody's buying each other drinks, and people are members are in there getting free drinks, and the caddies are in there getting free drinks, and like the townspeople are in there. And it's the greatest night in the bartender's history until his wife walks in, and she's got their 6-year-old boy by the ear, and then she marches him behind the bar, and he's trying to make Guinnesses and Jamesons, you know. And she says, "You tell your dad what you've been doing this fine day, you little rascal." And the kid goes, "I've been putting balls in the hole." The kid was hiding behind this tree, running out, putting the ball in the hole, so he could watch him go crazy. And that's how four people made a hole in one in one day.
That's outstanding. Four aces in one day. That's not bad. Rick Riley is joining us here. We were talking about this about 15 minutes ago or so. The match happened again yesterday. What's your level of interest in watching four non-golfers play golf on television?
Not much. My favorite person in sports, though, is Charles Barkley.
Oh, no doubt.
So whatever he's at, like, he could do, like, you know, fishing, and I would watch him because he's so funny. But I love when he tries to give other golfers crap, because I've played a lot of golf with Charles, and really it gets so bad you can't even watch. So one time we were playing in that Tahoe celebrity thing, you know, and at that thing, once you get to double bogey, you got to pick up the ball and put it in your pocket. So by the time we got to the fifth hole, I finally said, there must have been 500 people around the green waiting for Charles. And I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to watch Charles Barkley play golf, you got to come to the tee box. He's never getting to a green today." And Charles came up and just towered over me. And he goes, "It's not nice to make fun of fat people."
Charles, see, I bet you he has this fun teddy bear-like persona on TV, but people forget that this guy was such the ultimate competitor when he played. So when you are playing golf with Charles Barkley, by the way, we're being joined by Rick Riley, the book So Help Me Golf, Why We Love the Game is the book that you need to be picking up from the New York Times best-selling author. When you're playing with Charles, what's the balance of him not taking himself so seriously versus being competitive?
Well, first of all, the night before, he likes to stand on the bar and pour people shots of Patron all free. And so one night we did that at Tahoe, and I think his bar bill was $10,000. So then he comes to the tee box, and he's hungover, but he's still in a great mood. And there's no seriousness to it all. I was on TV a couple times, and every time he noticed the red light came on, he would stand over me as I was about to hit, and he'd go, and he'd whisper to me, "Hit it, you pussy. Hit it." And like, damn it, how am I supposed to hit it? And I hit it in the lake once. I hit it out of bounds once. The guy's huge.
Rick Riley with us here. So if you're not that interested in watching those four guys play golf, you're talking about NFL players playing golf out there, you probably do need some golf majors to make the things more to make the event more interesting. What is the best non-golfer that you've seen on the golf course from a professional sports standpoint. So professional athlete that's not a golfer that you've seen out there stroking it.
I guess Steph Curry. I played with him once, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. And, you know, he's just – everything he does is so graceful. He helped us go to – he went to Africa with us to hang nets for my foundation, Nothing But Nets. We hang bed nets over families so they don't get malaria. He actually came with us. And so he's a wonderful kid. He's a great guy. Of course, the greatest shooter to ever live, I think. But, I mean, I'm telling you, if that kid had taken up golf and forgotten basketball, this kid would be on tour. He's unbelievable.
Rick Riley with us here. You wrote a book about a former president's ability or inability to golf. Have you ever golfed with the president?
Yes. A stroke bet. Whoever had the lowest score would get $10 from the other guy. It was just me and him. And he took 7 mulligans. Well, he took talked to my back. And then one time, I'm in there for like par from like 6 inches. And he says, well, that's good, Rick. And then he picks up his chip. I'm like, Donald, did you just take a gimme chip in? Oh, yeah, yeah, I never miss those. I'm like, you chip like Edward Scissorhands. Who are you kidding? And then, but, you know, he's a lot of fun. And he's, you know, he buys you a bunch of stuff afterwards. But he goes, you know, I've won 12 club championships. And, you know, he's not a bad player. He's a 9 or 10, even though his official handicap is 2.8, which is, if he's a 2.8, then Queen Elizabeth can pole vault.
Yeah.
But whatever.
That's Trump.
But anyway, I said, so how did you win 12? I don't believe it. You're talking about the club championship against the best guy? He goes, yeah, whenever I buy a new course, I just play the club championship by myself. And then I'm the club champion, which is fine and kind of hilarious. Until you start running for president and telling people you're the club champion 18 times because you're a winner and you should vote for me because I'm a winner. I'm like, wait a minute, you're not exactly a winner.
So when's the latest you caught up with Tiger Woods?
You know, I don't cover pro golf anymore I guess 2 years ago. And Tiger... See, people are like, why are you a Phil guy? You always defend Phil, and you're always ripping on Tiger. I'm like, I love Tiger's game. I just wish someone had raised him better. He doesn't tip. He doesn't have dinner with him. He doesn't throw in. He doesn't have much fun playing golf. It's all kind of joyless. Whereas, I mean, if you've watched the matches, Phil won with Charles Barkley. I mean, he wants everybody to score well. Phil is great with the fans. Phil tips $500 to caddies and then carries his own bag. So, you know, you can say, yeah, okay, Phil's an idiot sometimes. He is. Phil's an idiot. This Saudi thing is proof. He can be an idiot. But he also lets you into his life. I've seen him stop the car in a rainstorm and see a bum on the side of the road, get out, give the bum his golf umbrella, and give him $500. You know, so it's for that reason – I wish he would come back. I don't know why he's holding off. But for that reason, I'm a Phil guy, not a Tiger guy.
So Help Me Golf is the book. Rick Riley is with us. He's in the state of North Carolina right now, and this is a book that you need to read if you love golf and you love Rick Riley, like I know a lot of people do, the NSMA Hall of Famer, here spending time with us.
I'm signing it tomorrow night at Quail Books in Raleigh. You know where that is?
Yeah, Quail yeah. Books.
7 o'clock, and I hope to get up and be funny for 20 minutes and then sign. And it doesn't have to be my book. If you got a Stephen King book, I don't care. I'll sign anybody's book. I just want people to come.
Rick Riley, I'm sure you're not going to have a problem with people showing up to a thing like this. On the way out, you talked about Phil a little bit. I've always been told for years, Rick, somebody's got to write the Phil Mickelson book. Like, there's a lot here with Phil that we don't know about, and we – hear the good stuff, but the idiot stuff are the things that we don't ever really see published that often. What has bothered you about the way that Phil Mickelson's been portrayed the last few months?
Well, you know, I read the book, and it's not all rips. You know, it's kind of a standard biography of a great player who's a fascinating guy, but there are some rips in there. A couple things that bother me. Okay, apparently there's, you know, he saw a document that said Phil lost $40 million over 5 years. He was making $45 million a year in purses and endorsements. So it's not like he's broke. Phil does say too much. I remember for a while he was telling people, I'm not fat. This is subcutaneous fat. And I'm like, Phil, everybody's got subcutaneous fat. That's what fat is. You know, so, the caddies call him Karnak because he's got all the answers. So the book is fair. The book is well reported. I just wish he'd come out and say, look, I'm sorry. In no way can you compare the Saudi government that beheads gay people and kills American journalists to the PGA Tour. That's just 10 ways from stupid. So he needs to apologize. That was dumb. I noticed he didn't apply or enter the first Saudi tournament. Now there's one spot left, and it could be Phil's going to do it. But if he does it, I think that would be really sad, because I don't see how you wake up in the morning, no matter how much they give you, and support a government that beheads its people.
Rick Riley, the book, again, is So Help Me Golf. Tomorrow he's going to be in Raleigh signing that book, and whatever book you show up with, he's going to be signing it at Quail Ridge Bookstore at 7 o'clock in North Hills over there in Raleigh. Rick, hope to see you sometime in the Triad again soon, and appreciate the time.
Where should I play tomorrow morning?
Say it again?
Where should I play golf tomorrow morning?
If you could get into Sedgefield, you should go there. Or Wakefield Country Club.
Open course, right?
Yeah. Wakefield Country Club in Raleigh. That's one that you'll have some success at, too.
I have no chance to get in there.
Yeah. No. You could talk your way into anything, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no doubt. See you. That's Rick Riley joining us here.
And now, The Drive with Josh Graham on WSJS Sports.
I didn't have a chance to work this into the show, and there's not a natural place for me to work this into the show, but in our studio, I've got college softball on. Oklahoma softball is 55-2. They have won 39 of those games by the mercy rule. 55-2. You find me a team in sports that's more dominant than that team right now. And while we were talking about guys who are not coming back to college, like Darion Sebron, Jake LaRavia, Trevor Keels, Drew Timmy, another example, Will, of literally, not like the high school team way of describing the word literally, literally in the 11th hour yesterday, decided he's going back to Gonzaga. So if you're a Carolina fan and you're like, well, for sure we're going to be the number one team preseason, Carolina's right there in a mix of UCLA and Gonzaga with Timmy back, where you might be able to slot those teams 1, 2, 3 in whatever order you please. And Kentucky's pretty darn good with a lot of guys they have returning too. Another guy who's pretty darn good is our guy Darren Vaught, who you know from USA Baseball and High Point play-by-play. And now, this weekend, doing some high school play-by-play. And this is what's interesting about this, Darren. You've done so much baseball, called a lot of great baseball at the collegiate level, and you've never called high school baseball before?
Never once.
Wow.
Like, I mean, think about it. I did AAA baseball for the Durham Bulls beginning last summer. I called the U.S. Olympic squad last summer in their exhibition games. I've done as good of college baseball as there's ever you'll find. Have never once in my life called high school baseball.
Burlington, right?
But I'm going to be in Burlington at the home of the sock puppets, Burlington Athletic Stadium. The 2A and 4A state championships are taking place there tomorrow and Saturday, and I'm your guy on those broadcasts.
Where can we find it?
The NFHS Network. They do, as you might know, a lot of high school games nationwide, and they'll have a link for that. I'm sure I'll push it out on my Twitter and social. So it's out there. Just search North Carolina Baseball State Championships, and you should be able to find a streamable link.
At Darren Vaught, doing that on Friday and Saturday. That's where you can follow him on Twitter. You spelled out your credentials of what you've covered baseball-wise. I don't think anybody that we have on regularly knows as much about college baseball as you do or cares about it as much as you do. So tomorrow must be like, in addition to doing state championship baseball, it must be like Christmas to you. Which in-state host do you think has a better draw the North Carolina Tar Heels or my East Carolina Pirates?
The Pirates have maybe the toughest two seed there is in the Virginia Cavaliers.
Yes.
Something about this ECU team, though, man. You and I have talked about it. They lost their ace a week before the season started. Their opening day shortstop is now a pitcher in the rotation. Hadn't thrown since high school. It's to me the best job Cliff Godwin's ever done. I just can't imagine them not being in Omaha. It's not even that it's the least talented team he's ever had to have a chance at it, but it would be the most unconventional. That just makes it feel like, okay, well, this is going to be the one that does it, right?
It's a win-win for me, man. I see the College World Series starts the day before my wedding, so I'm not going. And I've always said that, you know, if ECU goes to the College World Series, I'm going to be there the first time that it happens. Well, I'm not going to go if it happens this year. So if it happens, I'll be happier than anybody. But if it doesn't, I won't feel guilty about the fact that I'm not able to make it.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the others hosting in our state in Chapel Hill. You know, North Carolina's got Georgia as a number two. VCU is a really, really, really good mid-major team at that as a number three there. They might be my favorite number three in the entire field. I like Grand Canyon as well. They're playing in the Stillwater Regional. But, dude, North Carolina's on a tear, too. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see both North Carolina and ECU in Omaha. I don't know that I would put money on both of them making it, but it wouldn't surprise me. They're both capable.
The Pirates have won 18 straight games. North Carolina, fresh off winning the ACC Baseball Championship. Wake Forest is in the College Park Regional. They've got UConn and Jim Pender's team that's pretty darn good, been pretty good for a while. It almost seems like every year they make the tournament. What do you give the Deeks a puncher's chance at getting out of that regional?
Yeah, I do. It's not a bad draw for them. UConn is tough. I would be a little more worried about UConn than I would the host Maryland, actually. But look, this is a good Wake Forest team. It got to 40 wins. The pitching has been unreal as of late. Rhett Lauder, their ace, is a big part of that. He won the ACC Pitcher of the Year.
Got to go deep on Friday. Got to go deep tomorrow at 1.
I would think that that's a requirement. But we know these guys can hit. So, you know what? If it happens, he gets touched up a little bit. I mean, it's a capable lineup. They don't refer to them as Rake Forest for nothing. They can put runs on the board.
The last time the Deeks made the tournament, they got out of the regional round with a nice group on that team, Gavin Sheets and company, in 2017. Darren Vaught with us here. We're talking baseball before we get to unusual questions. If you want to send them in, at WSJS Radio, you could send it in, 336-777-1600. We'll answer those in just a second. Really just an opportunity for you to ask whatever you'd like, sports or otherwise. Otherwise, it's usually more fun. Tommy Tanks, he entered the transfer portal today. Where on the scale of shocked were you that this happened, and does that level of shock exceed the level of shock many felt on Monday that State didn't make it into the field?
It's a fair question. I'm less surprised at this today than I was when State didn't make the field. Now, that comes with a caveat. I was made aware that this was a possibility by some people when I was in Charlotte at the ACC tournament last week and sort of poked around a little bit, including with Elliot Avent. When I saw him, sort of gave him a, hey, what's the deal with Tommy? Mainly I wanted to see if Tommy was going to play with the collegiate national team this summer, which I think, as far as I know, is a possibility and that sort of thing. All indications are, it's been rumored for several weeks that he wants to be closer to home. He's from Florida. Knowing what I know about Elliot Avent and the coaching staff, if that was the only reason, they would be really, really upset that this is something that Tommy wants to do. Because whether it be Florida State or the Gators, those programs didn't want to take the chance on Tommy that NC State did initially, mm-hmm. right? So I think it would be fair for any coaching staff to be perturbed and annoyed at the idea that Tommy was going to come to Raleigh and do what he did for a season, be maybe the best freshman season ever in college baseball. It's definitely up there in the ACC. And then jump ship just to potentially even go to a conference rival in Florida State. But there's the issue of his positioning, and you know, he hurt his shoulder, which led him to mainly be a designated hitter for NC State, but he's a corner infielder. I think next year he was mainly going to play first base for NC State. Tommy seems to be dead set as being, it's being reported by David Hale of ESPN, that this is a bigger factor than was initially thought. Tommy is apparently dead set on, he's a third baseman. Now, I think if you were going to get a couple more years at NC State, unless he's trying to become a draft eligible sophomore next year, I don't know if that's possible with him. So if he is, sure. But if not, you were going to get a couple more years. And typically, like, you can get into the position that you want to get during a three-year career. I don't know that years one and two, especially when you break home run records in the batter's box, really matter that much in terms of your prospect status, which is, again, rumored to be what he is focused on here. And he wants to be able to play third base every day because it helps his MLB draft status.
Darren Vaught with us here. Let's get weird. Answer some unusual questions.
Last week, guys, everybody made it out that I got mad at Josh and I left the press conference. That's not right. I thought it was an unusual question, and it's okay.
It's time for Unusual Questions with Josh Graham.
On Twitter at WSJS Radio, 336-777-1600. Will Dalton, you had one queued up on the way in. What was that question?
So, in light of you going to Chris Rock last night, I was curious for you guys, whether it's for just nostalgic reasons or sentimental or the place was just electric, what is like the greatest event, sports, concert, or otherwise, that you have ever been to?
I think it might be recency bias, but I think maybe the top three have happened for me in the last 5 months.
You've had a lot.
Where I was at Coach K's last game at Cameron, and I was at Coach K's last game. That's number one. New Orleans, 70,000 people. I cried at the under four timeout when it was tied because it was so cool. It was overwhelming. I knew how it felt when you see those videos of, you know, like teenagers crying when the Beatles started playing in the 60s. That's how I felt watching Duke and Carolina in the Final Four. So that's number one probably, but going to see the Avett Brothers at Red Rocks, going to Fenway Park and watching the Orioles win last weekend, pretty darn cool. Watching Paul McCartney and Winston-Salem the previous weekend. Yeah, a lot of really cool stuff, but number one has to be that Duke Carolina game in New Orleans.
Yeah, this is going to take some sifting through. We've got categories here.
Okay.
Recently, I've got a pretty good sports one because I got to go with High Point to Rupp Arena at Kentucky when they put Tubby Smith's name up in the rafters.
That's cool.
That was even, like, aside from being able to call the game, that was just such a cool couple of days. And, I mean, an unreal environment because Kentucky fans love that guy.
Yeah, you were sitting next to me for the 2019 Duke Carolina game in Charlotte.
That's for sure. I mean, if you want to talk best game, yeah.
The only time Zion really played against Carolina.
Yeah, nothing's going to top that. I mean, you know, when our friend Ed Harden, who's covered everything there is to cover, walks away from that game and says, "That's the best game I've ever covered," you just know you were there for a really big moment. Concert is hard to narrow down. I'm going to – you – You give me hell for Jimmy Eat World all the time and the fact that I like Jimmy Eat World.
I don't.
World
you give me hell because I claim to know Jimmy Eat World and I can only name two of their songs.
Right.
I don't give you hell for liking Jimmy Eat World.
No, you don't. That's a good correction. I saw them. It was a 10-year anniversary tour of their album Futures, and they played the record from front to back in sequence.
Pain, good song off that record.
Yeah. They played it at the Orange Peel in Asheville, which is one of the best venues there is in
America. I wish
that
would impress you. I thought I would impress you with that. Some Jimmy Eat World knowledge.
You knew one song off of one album.
But the other one I knew was Pain from the Futures album.
Yes. Not to mention the title track Futures, which is...
Oh, I didn't know there was a title track on there.
One of their best songs. Anyways, they played it front to back at the Orange Peel. It was spiritual for me.
Will Dalton, how would you answer this question?
This one's pretty easy for me. This was the Carolina Duke game in Chapel Hill in, I guess, 2020 when I was a DG show intern. David Glenn had asked me, have you ever been to a Carolina Duke game before? I'm like, no. He let me go cover it for the show, and it was only my second time ever going to the Smith Center. I hadn't been since, like, fourth grade. Going down on the court and being, like, me to this chair beside me to Cole Anthony and all the other heels, like, it just...
Oh, and it was the double OT game.
Correct. The game was unbelievable.
Yeah. So, getting this one written in, if I open the refrigerator, what's the strangest thing in there?
I like this one.
You open the fridge. Darren Vaught, strangest thing in your fridge right now.
I might have thrown them out. I had beets in there recently.
Yeah.
That I was true. Putting those in like a blended smoothie type thing. Superfood, mm-hmm. Beets.
Uh-huh. I hear you.
I think those went bad, what I had left of them. I was not great about consistently using. It was a lot of beets.
Yeah.
That's probably the weirdest
Will Dalton, thing. Weirdest thing in your fridge.
Oof. Do you have an answer off the top of your head? Because I don't right now.
I
might need to think about it.
Is it weird to have, like, the new, like, having Chick-fil-A sauce from Chick-fil-A in a bottle? Is that strange?
If by weird you mean, like, uncommon, no, I don't think that's uncommon.
No,
I think a lot of people keep Chick-fil-A sauce now.
How about onions in the fridge? Do you keep those in the fridge, or do you have, like, a separate section that you put onions?
Oh, like a bin. My parents used to have this wooden bin.
Yeah.
That sat next to the refrigerator, and it always confused me. I'm like, okay, if you've already, like, sliced onions, they go in the fridge.
Let me ask this question. I went to Chris Rock last night. Top comics usually have you lock up your phone during the show. I'm about it. I wish more places would do it. How would you feel about... like a team saying, you know what? If you go to our games, you can't be on your phone. We're going to lock it up.
No chance. Social media is too important for them.
Well, I'm asking you, how would you feel about it?
Well, I would. I think it's too important. I think the experience, you want families taking photos together. You want all of that. Like you just want people to be able to use their phones.
You could do that in the parking lot outside.
Yeah, that's not as aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I mean, you're
not showing off Camden Yards adequately online if all of the photos at Camden Yards are out in the parking lot.
I saw people posted pictures from outside the venue saying, I'm going to go see Chris Rock, and there's a sign and all that stuff. It's just...
Well, it's because they had to. Otherwise, they would have posted them from inside.
I know, but everybody... and guess what? What I'm saying is everybody turned out okay. We all turned out fine. I don't like the pictures when we look at, like, U.S. Open champs and the background now. Every single great shot is everybody with their phone up. But when you turn up the Masters, nobody's on their phone because you can't have your phone in there. So guess what? Everybody's hands are free for a good old clap. Hey, good job. It's great. And I'm plugged into this event a little bit more. Cameron did it, for example, that'd be great. Like, oh, be awesome. It's already small. We could do it.
I could totally see Cameron Indoor Stadium doing
that. That'd be great.
I don't
They'd still
know
sell
that
play
at,
they
you.
Would sell that place out. Like,
of course they would.
That's what, like, it wouldn't matter. It's kind of like the Masters. Like, you could do it, and, you know, I wish they would experiment with it. So, you know what, we're just going to lock
up
your phone.
I think you're on to something in that there are certain venues that could pull it off.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think it's an every venue thing, every sporting event thing, but certain venues for sure could pull it off, and I wouldn't scoff at the idea that Cameron Indoor spectators couldn't take photos or whatever.
What's your unusual question?
What's the best second wind a song has ever had?
Oh.
In light of Stranger Things,
yes.
Which I'm a huge fan of. I don't know if you guys have seen the new season. The song Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush, which was released in August 1985, because it's prominently featured in the show, in the new season of the show, has like surged up Apple's charts. It's the most successful digitally Kate Bush has ever been.
It's got to be. Are we counting Whitney Houston's cover of I Will Always Love You, Dolly Parton? Are we counting that?
No, see, I don't think the covers don't count. I think, you know what I mean? Like, it would have to be, like, Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley.
Great example.
Because of the Rick roll.
Excellent.
Got a second life.
That's a great example. The Running Man, similar way.
Yeah.
I like where your head's at. Yeah, I think Rick Astley might be the right answer to that.
I think it has
It's still funny. Still is, every time it happens. I don't know if I've been Rick rolled in a long time, but... if I were Rick Rolled today, I think it would be great. Darren Vaught, I think you're
Does
great.
Will even know enough of what a Rick Roll is to Rick Roll us right now? He has no idea what we're talking about.
What's a Rick Roll?
We're
no strangers to love. Will, it was such an opportunity for you just to blare some Rick Astley. Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
Never gonna turn around. Darren, great stuff. Appreciate you, bro, and I'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the high school baseball and also the baseball of college baseball variety at the regional stage.
Nice, well said. Thanks,
a lot of baseball. Can I say baseball again? Baseball.